Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Richard Whitney, and I'm representing the plaintiff, Mayla Davenport, in this appeal. Your Honors, this case concerns three specific issues that have been raised, but at bottom, linking the issues is the question of whether this Court's rule in Bell versus EPA and the Supreme Court's rule in Reeves versus Sanderson Plumbing, that when an employer's explanation for an adverse employment action is exposed as false, a discriminatory motive may be inferred, are going to be applied and enforced. For in this case, this Court is presented with a decision maker on behalf of the defendant employer, George Kayla, who terminated the plaintiff, Ms. Davenport, claiming he was just following company policy when in fact he followed its inverse, provided a patently irrational explanation that was riddled with inconsistencies, supported by claims that other managerial witnesses exposed as false, and then topped this off by giving three different and contradictory answers to the basic question of plaintiff's job capabilities and skills.
What evidence did you present to establish that it was irrational to choose her job classification for one of the RIFs?
Well, first of all, it was contradictory to the policy. The policy contemplates first identifying the company's service unit and then choosing the employee within the company's service unit that presumably was least able to perform the remaining work. What the company did in this instance was decided, I'm going to choose a grade 14, comparable to a foreman level, essentially, across three different units and decide which of them is the least able to perform the remaining work, even though they covered three different units. It was comparing apples and oranges. And in selecting a grade 14, that is by definition selecting a category of employee for non-salaried exempt salaried non-exempt that are most able to do the work within their respective areas, as Mr. Kayla himself admitted, because grade 14 is the highest level within that category before you go up into the exempt category. And as he testified, these are the employees who have the most experience and have learned to do all the jobs within their respective areas. Therefore, if one of the criteria is to determine who can do the remaining available work, this would be the last choice you would make would be to choose a grade 14 because they're most capable. And that also leads into one of the contradictions made by Mr. Kayla in this matter, in that in making the selection, he gave three different answers about Ms. Davenport's capabilities. At one point during his deposition, he said all she knew how to do was to issue shop kits. At another point earlier on in the deposition, he said a grade 14 knows how to do every function in the storeroom, which is the correct answer. And then when asked at a later point in the deposition, he said, I don't know what function she could perform. So in the course of one deposition, we hear she could only do one thing, she could do everything, and I don't know what she could do. And yet somehow we're supposed to believe from this that Mr. Kayla made a reasoned determination that she was less able to perform than the other grade 14s, including those doing completely different jobs.
Outside of the grade 14, what was the total? There was almost 100 people that were let go in this RIF. Is that correct?
Plant-wide, yes. But in the area under Mr. Kayla's responsibility, there were a total of four.
Plant-wide, though, there's a pretty significant reduction in force. How much litigation was there, or was there litigation regarding any of the other people who lost their jobs here?
I don't know the answer to that, save for I do know of one other case in which I was personally involved, so I don't know how much else other litigation beyond that.
The record doesn't tell us that.
No.
How widespread the claims were of discriminatory selection to be included in this RIF.
Yeah, beyond that, I don't know how much litigation this generated.
And back to a factual question. You know, could you review for me what your evidence is that Wajian told Kayla that the complaints against Wajian were for discrimination?
It's by inference, Your Honor. The facts that were established by way of admission is that Mr. Kayla admitted knowing that the plaintiff had filed some type of complaint against Mr. Wajian around 1997.
Right, and I wanted to hone in on whether he knew it was discrimination.
Well, Your Honor, I would suggest that when you look at the totality of circumstances, are you talking about Mr. Wajian or
right.
Mr. Kayla? Well,
how Kayla knew that the complaint against Wajian were for discrimination. It's clear in the briefs that he knew there was a complaint filed. I just wondered if there was any other evidence or any evidence to suggest that he knew it was discrimination.
Not directly, but by way of inference, Your Honor. Mr. Kayla did know that the plaintiff specifically had filed some type of complaint against Mr. Wajian, and he admitted that he knew that Wajian had got demoted as a result, so he knew it was serious. Wajian himself admitted knowing that the complaints against him were for race and sex harassment, and I would argue and have argued that he would also have reason to conclude that he knew the plaintiff was one of the complainants, and I can address that as well if you like. And
yeah, but I've read that. I mean, it's the process. There was another African-American woman as well, right?
Who was – actually, there were a total of three, and Mr. Wajian claimed, well, I don't know who made the complaint, but it was a limited universe of 10 to 12 that were interviewed. And my client, Ms. Davenport, was the one who directly confronted Mr. Wajian and said to him, you know, these comments you're making are offensive to me, and further asked for a meeting with the higher-level supervisor right in front of Mr. Wajian, and it's shortly after that he gets disciplined. I think there's plainly enough evidence to draw a reasonable inference. It would be like if you had made offensive comments to me and Justice Stevens walked into the room and I said, I'd like a meeting with you about this, and I told you I was angered by it, and then you were disciplined a week or two later. You would obviously draw a reasonable inference from this that I was the one who had made the complaint. You wouldn't say, well, that's pure conjecture, as defendant argues in its brief. So
you should have picked a different Supreme Court justice.
Well, but he is the supervisor here, which is, I believe, is that correct? In any event, whoever the supervisor is.
Yeah, he's our circuit.
He's
justice.
Our circuit.
Nobody
supervises this group.
All right, I was out on a limb on that one, I admit.
Yeah,
but the point is that there were certainly grounds to draw the reasonable inference that Ms. Davenport and his see no evil, hear no evil protestations that, oh, I had no idea who it was, simply don't wash with the facts. Your Honors, I see that my time on direct is expired. I'll reserve my remaining for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Whitney. Okay, Ms. KK?
May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Sarah Kagey, representing Northrop Grumman Systems Corporation in this appeal. Your Honors, the District Court properly determined that Ms. Davenport's termination and the reduction in force was not retaliatory because the decision-maker, Mr. Kayla, had no knowledge that she'd ever engaged in any protected activity. Along the same lines, the District Court properly granted summary judgment on the race discrimination claim because Ms. Davenport failed to show that Northrop Grumman's reasons were a pretext for intentional discrimination.
Now, the District Court stated that it is uncontested that Kayla did not select a higher-graded employee for layoff in order to save money. If saving money wasn't the motivation, what possible reason would there be to choose a person in a job classification that required more experience over one that, you know, requires less?
Well, Mr. Kayla testified to a couple of points on that. One was that he had lower-grade individuals assigned to specific tasks that had to be completed, whereas presumably the higher-level people were more of an overseeing Secondly, Mr. Kayla had to look at his entire area of responsibility. What Ms. Davenport would like to argue is that the Northrop Grumman's policy ought to just look at a particular organizational unit, that the policy ought to just look at the main stockroom. But that's not what Mr. Kayla was presented with. The Northrop Grumman RIF policy provides that he has to look at his entire area of responsibility. So in looking at that entire area of responsibility, he had five grade 14 material coordinator specialists, and he determined he could get rid of one with the least impact on the business and that some of those duties could be absorbed by the lower-level employees who were already there. Now, Ms. Davenport's counsel discusses the reduction in force policy, and I want to clear up that it's not just the company service unit is the same as an organizational unit. In fact, the RIF policy itself specifically provides that a company service unit is going to encompass more than one organizational unit. So in this case, you determine your company service unit, which Mr. Kayla looked at his entire area of responsibility. Then you look at the job classification. So it was at that point he determined he could eliminate one grade 14 specialist. Then he had to rank the grade 14 specialists in order from there and compare them. This is not a case in which there is any fact or any evidence to suggest that Northrop Grumman's reasons were false. There's no record evidence going against the fact that Mr. Kayla followed the RIF policy as best he understood it and in accordance with the terms of the policy. There's no evidence that that policy itself is discriminatory, and there's no evidence that Mr. Kayla did not honestly believe that Ms. Davenport was the least qualified. Ms. Davenport's arguments that he made three different explanations, that's not the case. His testimony was that a grade 14 should know all the functions in the storeroom. He said he was not sure that Ms. Davenport did know all the functions. He was asked what she was doing before 2000, and he said he wasn't sure what she was doing before 2000 because he didn't supervise her then. And he specifically testified that what he did when he determined who should be let go in the reduction in force was he looked at what everybody was currently doing and what current skill sets they had. In her deposition, Ms. Davenport admitted that her primary duty was to issue shop kits. She had always worked in the main stock room. But Mr. Kayla had to look at what had to happen, not just in the main stock room, but he had a number of satellite stock rooms. He had shipping and receiving. He had chemical control. He had something called the Butler stock room and the microelectronics stock room. And Ms. Davenport admitted in her deposition that she had little to no experience in any of those other areas. Whereas the other four grade 14 specialists, two of them had experience in the main stockroom, just like Ms. Davenport did, but all of them also had additional experience in all the other stockrooms. Besides the fact that Mr. Kayla had received complaints just months before the reduction in force regarding Ms. Davenport's performance of her primary duty, and he'd spoken with her about that issue, and he didn't have any of the same sorts of complaints against any of the other individuals. With respect to the question about whether Mr. Kayla knew it was a discrimination complaint, there is no evidence that he did. He testified that he knew that there had been a complaint, but he didn't know the nature of the complaint, and he never talked about it with Mr. Wodzian. Mr. Wodzian, as Ms. Davenport's counsel noted, had 10 to 12 employees. Three of them complained. Two of the people who complained were retained in the reduction in force. Mr. Wodzian testified that he did not know who complained. And a suspicion, which is what Ms. Davenport would prefer us to have, a suspicion that she may have complained is simply not enough under well-settled Seventh Circuit precedent. The employer has to have actual knowledge. And all of this aside, even if somehow Mr. Wodzian did figure out that Ms. Davenport was one of the people who complained, there are no facts in the record to suggest that he played any part in the reduction in force decision. Both Mr. Kayla and Mr. Wodzian testified that he played no part in it, and there are no facts that would suggest that that's not true. There's nothing that would suggest Mr. Kayla was a rubber stamp or a cat's paw for Mr. Wodzian's recommendations in the reduction in force. In addition, although the district court didn't see any need to go beyond the lack of knowledge of the decision makers, certainly this court can affirm on any basis found in the record. There's also no basis for a causal connection between the 4 years between the protected activity, which was a complaint in 1997, and Ms. Davenport's termination through the reduction in force, which did not occur until 2002. In addition, as I said, two of the other people who complained at the same time as Ms. Davenport were retained in the reduction in force. Now, with respect to the race discrimination claim, there has to be pretext, and pretext means a dishonest explanation for the employment decision. It is not an opportunity to question a company's business decisions, to ask whether an employer acted wisely or even correctly. In this case, Mr. Kayla was given the nod that he had to eliminate four positions. He followed the reduction in force policy by looking at the company service unit and picking the job classifications that he thought could be eliminated, and then he ranked those employees in the elimination. At bottom, what Ms. Davenport is attempting to do is simply question Northrop Grumman's business decisions in making that reduction in force policy. Again, as I said, she thinks it would make more sense if you looked at each organizational unit, if you looked at the stock room and then the satellite stock room and then the Butler stock room. But that's not the way the policy is written. The policy is not written in any discriminatory way, and Mr. Kayla was therefore required to compare those five individuals, and there are no facts to suggest that she was not the weakest of those five individuals. Finally, Ms. Davenport in her brief spends a lot of time on immaterial, minor, testimonial inconsistencies, which are simply insufficient to defeat summary judgment. This is particularly true where the depositions were taken almost 4.5 years since the decision in question. Certainly the minor inconsistencies as to who was there at a performance review and whether somebody trained a replacement are simply not enough to defeat summary judgment. There are no factual questions with respect to the implementation of the RIF policy and Mr. Kayla's following of that policy and his honest belief that she was the least qualified of the individuals. Unless there are any questions, I think that's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Whitney.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, you asked the question, why grade 14? I think that's a very pertinent question, and I would submit we still have not heard an answer. We've never heard an answer to this throughout the pendency of this case. When asked on deposition, Mr. Kayla basically gave us a tautology, and we just heard it repeated here this morning. He had a large organization to look at. He determined that he needed to eliminate a grade 14 and then decided the least productive grade 14 was Ms. Davenport. That doesn't answer the question, why grade 14? Why select someone with the most area of expertise, with the most knowledge, with the most background? And furthermore, if the calculation was that the other grade 14s were best able to perform the remaining work, why weren't they the ones performing the remaining work? What actually happened in this case is after Ms. Davenport was laid off, she was replaced by three grade 12s who divided the work. The other grade 14s had nothing to do with it, including, and this was one of the things that counsel says was irrelevant, he actually was challenged, and two other managers said no, his testimony was false about that. It was actually one Caucasian woman that replaced Ms. Davenport, a grade 12 that she herself had trained to do the work prior to her replacing her. We do have more than enough for a prima facie case on race discrimination. We do have a basis for this case to be reversed and remanded. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Whitney. Thanks to all counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.